You have labor questions? They have answers. Labor Press.
Welcome back to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970 The Answer. I'm your host, Joe Maniscalco. My co-host is Bill Hohlfeld. He's in a remote location this week, and we're very happy to have Alexander Schmidt. He's a labor law expert. He's a columnist with Labor Press, and I think you know everything about the law, right, Alex?
I wouldn't say that, but it's a pleasure to be here anyway.
You know a lot.
Alex, it's nice to have you back on the program.
And one of the things you've been tackling recently is this issue of forced arbitration that's right before the Supreme Court right now. So tell us about the issue.
Forced arbitration is a way that employers deprive their employees of the opportunity to litigate disputes against the employers in a court of law. And what they do is they have form contracts. They make it a condition of either getting a job or, in many cases, even keeping your job, to sign away your right to sue your employer in court. Instead, you're forced into a small room, and if you have a gripe against your employer, you're forced to litigate that gripe alone, even if the employer is doing the same thing to thousands of other employees. You don't have a right to represent anyone other than yourself. And you go into a small room and you don't face a judge or a jury. You have to litigate your dispute in front of a private individual, presumably someone who's an expert in the area, sometimes a lawyer, sometimes not. But in most cases, that arbitrator is paid by the employer and largely selected by the employer. At least the arbitrator's umbrella organization is selected by the employer. And presumably, the employer and the employee both have an equal opportunity to select the arbitrator. But the employee, who's doing this alone, is a one-time player. They don't engage in arbitrations as a regular practice. They don't really know what they're doing necessarily. Even if they have the good fortune of being represented by a lawyer, they don't have control of the process.
And this is happening more and more, right?
It's happening. It's becoming ubiquitous. And the Supreme Court is now addressing whether or not forced arbitration clauses, boilerplate adhesion forced arbitration clauses, are legal under the National Labor Relations Act. The NLRA prohibits employers from preventing employees from engaging in what's called concerted activity, that is, working together for a common cause against their common employer. And the issue before the Supreme Court is whether the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board's interpretation of the concerted activity requirement is correct. And what the NLRB held was that employers cannot force employees to give up their rights to sue collectively, either in arbitration or in court.
Alex, is the NLRB, I know there were empty seats for a long time, is it finally fully staffed or no?
I'm not sure that all the seats have been filled, but I don't know for sure.
But they're not going to be, regardless of that, there's not going to be any friendly worker people on that board.
That's right. In fact, what has happened with the, I think at least one person has been appointed. What has happened is that the Justice Department has previously, during the Obama administration, supported the NLRB's position and filed briefs, even to the Supreme Court in this very case, saying that the NLRB's position should be upheld. But since the change in administrations, the election of Donald Trump, the Department of Justice flipped and put in new briefs and said our prior briefs were all wrong. Now we disagree with the NLRB, and we support the employer's position, which is that essentially the employer should be able to force individuals into these private rooms to fight the corporation all by themselves.
And that's just basically a tactical way of locking the courthouse doors to people, working people, giving them their day in court.
Not only giving them their day in court, but preventing them from leveling the playing field in disputes with the employer. The employers are powerful. They're wealthy. They can hire the best lawyers. Individuals can equal the playing field only, in many cases, only if they band together and fight the employer together, because if the employees can bring class actions or class arbitrations, they can induce very good lawyers, incentivize them to take the cases. If it's only individuals fighting the corporation, the individuals can't afford the lawyers, and the lawyers can't afford to take the cases because they'll be out of business, because they won't be able to make any money off of individual cases where the amount in controversy is a few hundred dollars or a few thousand dollars. So the only way to level the playing field is to let employees band together with concerted activity, which historically has included, by definition, class actions.
Alex, walk us through the numbers a little bit here, because what this translates to in dollar figures, because the way this was sold, when I read about this in the paper, it was so played down, like, oh, well, the average, the average dispute only comes to about $89, you know, per citizen, so it's not really a big deal. And that's the way this legislation got presented.
Yeah, and those are very skewed numbers. The Consumer Financial Protection Board did a 3-year study, and what they found, and they weren't focused on employees, they were focused on consumer actions. They found that billions and billions of dollars were recovered in class actions for millions of consumers over a 2-year period, whereas for consumers that are forced into individual arbitration, only 1,000 of them during the same 2-year period even bothered to go through the process, because it's usually cost prohibitive. And if an individual who has a few thousand dollars worth of loss has to fight a corporation by itself, by him or herself, without a lawyer usually, they prefer to drop the lawsuit. They drop their claims rather than spend hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars on a lawyer to recover less than they paid the lawyer. So the numbers just don't work out. They don't incentivize even the individuals to go to arbitration. As a result, thousands and thousands of viable, meritorious claims that consumers and employees have are just dropped. So the employer never has to face the consequences of either cheating their workers or cheating their customers.
Well, talk about, before we only have a couple minutes left, talk about the status of the Supreme Court case right now. Where how's it playing out? What stage is it at?
Well, the first Monday in October is when the Supreme Court annual session begins. And the very first case of this session on October 2nd was this forced arbitration case in the employee context. The arguments were heard. Then the case was submitted. And hopefully we'll hear within the next several months, and we'll get a favorable result. But given the constitution of the court, where you have 5 conservatives who were appointed by Republican presidents and 4 justices who were appointed by Democratic presidents, the odds are not good. The 5 conservatives have historically favored employers and big corporations in these forced arbitration cases.
And what about the specific parties involved in this case?
Well, in this case, there were actually 3 cases that were combined for this appeal. One involved overtime claims against Ernst & Young. One involved overtime claims against a company called Epic Systems. And the other one was an NLRB case that arose out of an ALJ's decision declaring the D.R. Horton Company's arbitration clause was unenforceable. And at the argument, the NLRB really took the lead and argued the case for all 3 of the plaintiffs that were on appeal.
So once this decision comes down, is it appealable? Is it done and that's it?
The Supreme Court is the Supreme Court for a reason. It's the supreme law of the land. And once it decides this case, if it comes out in favor of employers, you can expect these arbitration clause and employment contracts, non-unionized, we're focused on non-union employees, you can expect them to become ubiquitous in just about any context. They're already all over the place. I think you have 25 million people already subject to these, and this is anywhere from people who are working as at McDonald's or fast food organizations to employees who have high-level jobs.
Well, Alex, I would like to think that the Supreme Court would be at least as suspicious as I was when they all stayed late to pass this in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's a lot of bad case law that the Supreme Court has developed over the last 20 years, where they have really completely misinterpreted and reinterpreted a 1925 statute that permits arbitration. In a way that the statute as written excluded all employment contracts. It's clear as day, and no one disputes it. Even members of the Supreme Court don't dispute that. But through the guise of interpreting this 1925 Act over the last 20 years, the Supreme Court has turned it on its head and turned it into a weapon for employers to use against employees. And they have, despite Congress's clear contrary intent, to exclude employees, the Supreme Court has made employees subject to the Federal Arbitration Act. It's legislated from the bench, to use the words of Justice Scalia, who is the principal architect of rewriting the FAA, which is one of the great ironies of this situation.
Alex, we're going to have to leave it there. You want to give a phone number so people can reach you if they want to talk more about this or have this kind of issue?
Sure. You can reach me at my office. That's 732-226-0004. I have my own office in Colts Neck, New Jersey. We'd love to hear from you.
Well, we're talking to Alexander Schmidt, a labor law expert, and we'll be back right after this. Tune in for more Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970 The Answer.
You're listening to Labor Press on AM 970 The Answer.